You're listening to the Liberty News Radio Network, and this is the Political Cesspool. The Political Cesspool, known across the South and worldwide as the South's foremost populist conservative radio program, and here to guide you through the murky waters of the political cesspool is your host, James Edwards.
Well, welcome back, everybody, to the third and final hour of tonight's live broadcast of TPC this frigid Saturday evening, February the 20th, a once in a century snowstorm here in the Mid-South, and we've had it, and we've loved it. We've had a good time with it. Where do I have to go?
Well, we're in Memphis. This would be a monthly occurrence in the winter if we lived in Minnesota.
Well, that's right, but I'm just saying, you know, it's crippled so much and caused so much devastation down in Texas, but we've just had a good time with the building snowmen and snowball fights. And
well, look, you know, what's happened because of this in Texas shows us just how valuable fossil fuels are to America, and giving them up, you know, that is just what the enemies of America would hope we would do, give away this tremendous advantage in power and in a source of power for something as unproven and as problematical as green energy.
All right. Well, that being said, we talked about that in the first hour. Brad Griffin in the second hour with some good news about how it looks as though the American electorate may be shifting, and according to a recent poll and according to our gut instinct, which we've said for years, even in advance of that poll. Interesting hour with Brad. Be sure to check out and support his work at OccidentalDescent.com. But there's one thing we haven't mentioned tonight. We've talked about the legacy of Limbaugh. And let me say again, I'm so glad that Rush Limbaugh, one of the last things he ever did in this life was compare me with Bull Connor, and he did that on the show.
You're so glad that happened. I know it.
Bull Connor was right. If there's one person I want to be compared to, you could do worse than Bull Connor.
Yeah, Andrew Lackey. See, there were two. But see, here's the situation, too, about this watershed moment in American politics. We've got to find somebody that will speak about the interests of white people. Polite, paper-trained neoconservatives won't do it.
We're right here.
George Will, Ben Shapiro.
We're just waiting for our 500 million and 600 affiliate stations.
Not even Tucker Carlson will do it. But we've got to find someone who will do it, because every nabob in the Republican Party and the Democratic Party is, you know, just chomping at the bit to profess their allegiance to black people. But white people,
the people who actually vote for them, the people who actually support them, the people who they actually
and
are,
actually pay taxes, they're the people that are the untouchables, the outcasts in American society today.
Keith, there's one more thing we haven't mentioned that we should mention, and we didn't mention it last week because we had the special Valentine's Day show with the ladies. It was ladies' night, so we didn't cover current events and breaking news. But the Trump impeachment, this farce that was the second impeachment of Donald Trump, he's now 2-0, acquitted both times. But Brad Griffin, who we had in the second hour, also wrote about this. What was exactly accomplished by this charade of an impeachment? Number one, it was never realistically going to happen. It was performance art, politics, and a complete waste of time. It inflamed and united Trump's base. It confirmed Trump's control over the Republican Party. It stepped all over neoliberal Joe's first 100 days by dragging out the Trump show even further. It increased polarization and smoked out people like Liz Cheney. It made chances of crossing Trump and getting anything done in Congress beyond the COVID relief bill less likely to happen, and it accelerated the decline of conservatism incorporated. Brad's exactly right about all of that, Keith. That is what, I mean, the impeachment actually helped Trump. Now Trump is holding meetings at Mar-a-Lago. If he will take your call, Nikki Haley tried to get an audience with Trump. He rejected her. Trump will be the kingmaker of Republican politics up until the midterms, and then after the midterms in 2022,
that's what I want.
If he decides to run again, he'll be the shoe-in nominee for the Republican Party.
At some point,
and this impeachment cemented that reality.
You're right, absolutely. And Nikki Haley is the queen of the neocons.
What's her real name? Nimrata.
Yeah. I want us to play his bumper music, Nikki Hokey, by P.J. Proby, sometime in honor of Nikki Haley. Nikki Haley is everything that is wrong with the Republican Party. She's a neoconservative. She hates everything Southern and Confederate. And if she is the nominee for president in 2024, I'm not voting for her. Okay, I'm going to find some third party person to vote for. I'm not going to vote against my own interests. See, one of the things that got our numbers pumped up, as Brad said, you know, from like 5 or 6% to around 87%, people that say that their white identity is a big part of their, you know, their personality and their values and whatnot. What did that, I think, at least in the South, was the taking down of these statues. That was something that you get the ordinary normie Sons of Confederate Veterans type of guy, or somebody who still has, you know, relatives that fought in the Civil War and they are not about to disown them. These are the people that got a bucket of ice water in the face when they started tearing down these statues and said, they are saying that my family and my ancestors and me by extension are their enemies. And if they want us to be their enemies, you know, we're going to fight fire with fire. We're going to have identity politics too. We've got to find a Republican leader that's not afraid of the people that actually vote for him, James. How is that going to play out? Or will it play out? Will we get one or not?
Well, that's the thing we don't know. I don't know if we'll get one as soon as 2022 or 2024. Probably not. But it looks as though the way the electorate is shifting, and Brad talked about this, and he's written about this extensively at OccidentalDescent.com, which is why we had him on the show tonight. What we're talking about is this change in attitudes, not just of the Republican voting base, but that it is so predominant amongst the voting base that it almost has to shift the Republican leadership and the Republican elected officials. And so we talked about some evidence to that effect of Marjorie Taylor Greene, this Republican congresswoman out of Georgia, saying she's being attacked because she's white. She actually said that. That's the first time. I don't know when the last time that happened was. Trump never said anything like that. Yeah, people like Ron DeSantis sort of dialing up the temperature a little bit. You know, so we haven't got to the point yet where Republicans are saying, listen, I'm the white man's candidate. You vote for me and I'll take you to the promised land. We're not there yet. But what we are seeing, Keith, is that the cosmopolitan and metropolitan Republican voters are abandoning the GOP to go to the Democrats, and it's created this huge vacuum that's being filled by the working class, the middle class, the populist class of Republican voters, and you're starting to see, the tremors of that reflection in people from Marjorie Taylor Greene all the way up to the governor of the fourth most populous state in the union, the Florida, Ron DeSantis, and you're starting to see that. And how much further can it go? Well, that's what we're questioning. That's what we're wondering tonight with Brad Griffin.
Well, I think that the big player is going to be not the governor of or senator from Florida, but the governor of Texas, Jim Abbott. Jim Abbott's state has suffered because of liberal energy policy. They had Rick Perry, who was one of the more successful people. He was one of the most successful people, Rick Perry, as the head of the Department of Energy under Trump. And they need to hold on to that fossil fuel like the precious jewel it is, and basically tell the Department of Energy to go fly a kite.
Hey, much more to come in this hour, our third and the final of the night, including an interesting documentary I watched during this snow-filled week that we've been enjoying here in Memphis, but not maybe so much in Texas, and I'll tell you about it when we come back.
Have we realized the assault against our lives, our liberties, our faith? To defeat this assault, Christians and all people of goodwill should have strategies to prevail in our faith and principles, which are simple. No need for a complex formula. One goal, one aim. A strategy like the heroic Christians of the past. We win, they lose. Nothing less. Big Q, Little Q. The Calm Before the Storm, by a friend of Medjugorje. The strategy of heaven revealed. Big Q, Little Q. The Calm Before the Storm. Available on Amazon.com. or by calling Caritas in the U.S. at 205-672-2000.
Foundation for Moral Law is a nonprofit legal foundation committed to protecting our unalienable right to publicly acknowledge God. The Foundation for Moral Law exists to restore the knowledge of God in law and government and to acknowledge and defend the truth that man is endowed with rights not by our fellow man, but by God. The foundation maintains a twofold focus. First, litigation within state and federal courts. Second, education. Conducting seminars to teach the necessity and importance of acknowledging God in law and government. How can you help? Please make a tax-deductible contribution, allowing foundation attorneys to continue the fight. You may also purchase various foundation products as well at morallaw.org. Located in Montgomery, Alabama, the Foundation for Moral Law is a nonprofit, tax-exempt 501c3, founded by Judge Roy Moore. Please partner with us to achieve this important mission. morallaw.org.
The spirit of the American West is live and well in Range Magazine, the award-winning quarterly devoted to the issues affecting the American West. Each issue contains informative articles, breathtaking imagery, as well as the culture of cowboy spirit today, and gift ideas like the 2021 Real Buckaroo Calendar. Order online from rangemagazine.com. Loving Liberty Network salutes the spirit of the American West at rangemagazine.com.
Well, my mom smokes and my dad smokes, and I saw them smoking, so I tried it. They're telling me not to smoke, but they smoke themselves.
When it comes to smoking, are you sending mixed signals?
But when you teach someone a certain way to do things and you go back on that certain way, it sends mixed signals to the person that they're trying to teach. The parents need to be the example.
Smoking. If you think you're old enough to start, you're smart enough to stop. A public service message from this station and the Church of Jesus Christ of Latter-day Saints.
Everybody's high on consolation. Everybody's trying to tell me what is right for me. Yeah. My daddy tried to bomb me with a sermon, but it's plain to see that they can't comfort me. Sorry, Charlie, for the imposition. I got the strength to carry on. Yeah, I need a drink and a quick decision. Now it's up to me. She's ghost. Oh, I better learn how to face. She's gone. She's gone.
Well, you know, ladies and gentlemen, if you're hearing Hall and Oates on TPC, we must be getting ready for Jack Ryan's segment, because I'd be playing doo-wop otherwise. But she's gone, Jack. Jack Ryan. I feel like a Chicagoan this week with all the snow and ice. A foot of snow. A foot of snow over the course of two severe winter storms over the course of the same week. I'm up there with you in Lake Michigan in thought and heart, if not in body. Jack, she's gone. What are we doing tonight, buddy?
Well, I just wanted to present that music. I really like Hall & Oates, and I think they were one of the best blue-eyed soul music teams of the 70s, early 80s. I think it's very good. I sort of had that theme and the idea that Rush Limbaugh is gone and he's passed away, and whether you liked him, you didn't like him, he was an important person for a lot of people in radio, but he's passed on and then he's gone. So that's the kind of theme. But yeah, it's brutal winter. This snow and this cold has buried all the south, all the way down to Texas. I think it almost got into parts of Mexico. So silver lining is we don't have to listen to that Swedish autism global warming teen Greta Thunberg mouthing off about global warming. I like to see her try to do that in Chicago on Michigan Avenue with -5 degrees Fahrenheit, 45 degrees winds. I like to see her try to mouth off about that stuff. See her freeze to death. But yeah, it's winter. It's definitely It's winter when you're a little kid. All this snow is fun and stuff. As you get older, it gets to be not as much fun in Chicago. It's like something really out of a science fiction movie. Walking Dead, all these places I've been since my whole life, they've shuttered down and they're deserted. It's beautiful, but it's looked like a war happened and all the people were taken away, raptured somewhere or something like that. But we're tough people. We're Nordic people. We can handle the cold. I certainly can handle the cold. You Southern guys... You Southern guys are not very good snowball fighters. I used to fight with them, and I'd throw back and forth, and I'd throw one up high up in the air, and the Southern guy would look up in the air to fall, and I'd nail him with a line drive right in his face. So you guys don't know how to handle the snow.
Hey, speak for some Southerners, Jack, if you can, because I'll tell you, I got a dead eye with a snowball. Hey, I have had more more snowball fights in the last week with my wife and children. Because snow has been on the ground for an entire week, so 1 week of snow on the ground is the equivalent to 7 normal years of snow on the ground for us here in the in the Mid-South, and it's been wonderful. And we've had some snowball fights. We've been doing sledding. We built a snowman today. I may put up on my Twitter account here after the show the snowman we built today. If he comes to life tonight and starts dancing around my house, I don't know what I'm going to do, but he's big enough to do that. He's almost my size. So we did all that, and we had some snowball fights. I had an amazingly accurate, arm there with the snowball. So I'm proud about that.
You.
And it's been an interesting week. But you know,
beautiful family, beautiful wife.
Yeah, I sent. I did. I sent some to you. Well, you've actually. Jack has actually seen some. Jack has seen some in advance of everyone else. Jack and I were texting today, and I was saying, like, man, I'm out in the snow right now. I'll give you a call in a few minutes. And I called Jack before the show, and we went over a couple of ideas and some thoughts for tonight's show and next week's show. But, I also sent him some pictures of what we were doing out in the snow. So he's actually seen what I'm describing. But, I want to talk about one thing here, Jack, if we can. And we touched on this in the first hour. We spent at least a segment on it, and that is the legacy of Rush Limbaugh. You and I were actually talking about that just a few minutes before we went on the air tonight when we were on the phone together. Tell us what you think. I mean, this is obviously big news, however you want to take him, whether he was the greatest manifestation of conservative resistance or whatever you want to call him, or if he was a great hero or a great man, or if he kind of fell short of the standard, or wherever you fall on that spectrum, where do you fall, Jack?
Well, I feel he was a very talented entertainer, and he came around at a time of just brutal leftist monopoly of the media. I was in New York City teaching in public school, and then I was in this terrible MBA program. And it was just a terrible time for New York City and the country, just appalling violence, the kind of violence that we have now. And there were just so few voices there that would just observe what was going on. And one of them was Howard Stern, another one was Rush Limbaugh. And it was so refreshing that he sort of broke this media monopoly. And then the thing happens is you find someone who seems so good, he's on your side, and you invest all of your hopes in this one particular person, and he ends up letting you down. And Rush Limbaugh, he took the opposition to it, but he only went so far. And when push came to shove, he did take the 30 pieces of silver. He betrayed us. He worked for this Zio media, neoconservative warmongers in Iraq and the like. And he touched upon mass immigration, but he didn't really lead the great replacement. So and then when push comes to shove, he did take the 30 pieces of silver. He managed to make, I don't know what his total figures was, 60 million, 600 million, whatever it is. But I think you are as talented as Rush Limbaugh, but you haven't sold out. You haven't sold our people. So when you don't do that, you got to scramble. You got to find other ways to make it. But Rush Limbaugh was incredibly talented, funny, and the like. But he just, in the end, our enemies saw that and they approached him and said, okay, you got to stop here. If you do any more, we're going to take away your advertising, all these things. And he decided that the money was more important than our people. And so, you know, he's an entertainer, but I look at him not quite as bad as William F. Buckley, but right up there. He's someone who pretended to be on our side, a great leader for us, and then he chose the money over our
people. That's what we said. I mean, just to encapsulate what we talked about in the first hour in 1 minute, And we were talking about just one interview of so many we've had over the course of the last 16 years. But Drew Lackey, the former chief of police of Montgomery, Alabama, during the civil rights era, he never had anybody like that on. He never had anybody like me on. Right. Even CNN had me on multiple times, but Rush Limbaugh never did. And so it was that, you know, and I said, at what point do you achieve enough stability and financial security to where you can tell the truth? Is it after $1 million? How about $100 million or $500 million, which is what his net worth was said to be when he passed? $500 million isn't enough for you to give you for you to give us one show where you just give us one TPC episode in your entire library. You can do it your last day. He knew he was living on borrowed time for the last year. He never did that. Now, was he better than the left? Was he better than anything you'll find on MSNBC, CNN, Fox, even Fox, especially right. Fox? Maybe. Yeah, he was better than all of that, but. He didn't take you to where you need to go to win, and we got to win. We got to win. We don't need to get 3/4 down to a victory. We need to get all the way. And he wasn't that. And I appreciate for whatever good he did, for whatever gateway he was to TPC or to other people who will take you to the finish line. I appreciate him for that. He was better than most. I would take him rather than leave him. But you know, he wasn't a winner. He wasn't a guy that was going to take you to completion.
He's an entertainer. You know, he's an entertainer in a corrupt, occupied country. And we live in an occupied country. We got dispossessed. We lost our media and academia in the late 60s. And so, given the situation, what are you going to do? You got to try to find some avenue to make a few shekels. And Rush Limbaugh did. So I don't look at him as a savior. He was entertaining. He was a good spokesman. You know, we need to have our issues, and we need to be good on the radio. And he was a good
radio right there,
entertainer.
Jack, we'll be right back. Stay tuned.
Pursuing liberty, using the Constitution as our guide. You're listening to Liberty News Radio. USA Radio News with Dan Naraki.
An engine failure aboard a Boeing 777 aircraft taking off from Denver International Airport Saturday sent large chunks of debris raining down on neighborhoods in the northwest part of the city. A United Airlines flight bound for Honolulu reported engine trouble and returned to Denver shortly after takeoff, scattering debris over several neighborhoods in the process. Broomfield, Colorado Police Public Information Officer Rachel Welt tells Fox News that no injuries have been reported on the ground, which is surprising given where the debris fell.
I'm honestly shocked looking at this debris field and how busy Commons Park is. This is a very popular spot in Broomfield. We have the dog park. We have the turf field. There's playgrounds. This park, on a day like today when it's not as cold as it was last weekend, we could have hundreds of people here. And the fact that we are still not getting reports of any injuries is absolutely shocking at this point. It's amazing.
The plane was able to land safely. This is USA Radio News.
Awesome and amazing day. Men, John Jubilee with Energize Health, and I want to just talk to you man-to-man for a moment. 1/3 of men 50 and over suffer with high blood pressure. That high blood pressure medication has a horrible side effect, worse than death, erectile dysfunction. And it's brutal, but let's just talk about it medically. We have had thousands of people completely reverse diabetes, high blood pressure, irritable bowel syndrome, yes, and EV, raise their testosterone 500 points naturally through the breakthrough science of intercellular hydration. Men, if you're intelligent, you're skeptical. I want you to be skeptical. But go log on to our website, energizehealth.com. Click that red button, watch a masterclass, and then watch thousands of men just like you who reversed every single issue that I just mentioned. I don't make a claim. My clients make a claim. EnergizeHealth.com.
Former President Trump will make his first public appearance since leaving office next week. Val Dior has the details from the USA Radio News Texas Bureau.
The former president will address the Conservative Political Action Conference, or CPAC, in Florida next week. He'll speak about the future of the Republican Party and the conservative movement. CPAC is in Orlando, Florida, this year from February 25 to 28. It's his first major public appearance since he left the White House, and it's said he'll take on President Biden's immigration policies as well, which are proving to be the polar opposite of the Trump administration. From the USA Radio News Texas Bureau, I'm Val Dior.
And President Biden will hold his first bilateral meeting with Canadian Prime Minister Justin Trudeau next week. The two leaders are expected to discuss the coronavirus pandemic, economic issues, and climate change during the virtual meetings. President Biden's cabinet is also expected to meet with Canadian ministers to discuss an array of issues. This is USA Radio News.
Welcome back. To get on the show, call us on James's Dime at 1-866-986-6397.
I guess any college football fan will know that is the Florida State war chant, and there's a reason we're playing that tonight, the Florida State Seminoles. I've actually been to Osceola's grave. Do you know where he's buried, anyone? Now, Jack, you routinely stump me on Shakespearean knowledge. Do you know where Chief Osceola is buried? I've been to his grave. Where is it?
Oh, that's pretty good. Now I was trying to work out the.
I put you on the stump. I put you on the spot. I should have done that, but no, it is a good question nonetheless. That's a good trivia question. Well, he is buried. Well, you would think that, right? I mean, because that's where the Florida State campus is. But no, he's buried in Charleston, South Carolina. He's buried in Charleston, and I've been to his grave. But anyway, the reason I play that tonight is that I was watching in the midst of this. Incredible week of weather here in the South. We've been out in the snow a lot, but then you got to come in and warm up by the fire. And so I was watching this documentary on the Incas, Now, I have always been fascinated, Jack, by the pre-Columbian empires of Central and South America. Now, our American Indians, they were more or less nincompoops compared to what you had in Central and South America. They were hunters and gatherers. They didn't really leave anything to be studied or to be marveled at. But the Aztecs did, the Mayans did.
Right.
And I went down actually to Belize and to Honduras and toured some Mayan ruins a couple of years ago with my wife, and it's astonishing. I mean, it's obviously not. I mean, all these people who say, you know, they were so advanced, they were more advanced than the Europeans. No, they weren't. I mean, the Romans were building aqueducts at like a 1% grade hundreds of years before Christ. I mean, obviously these tribes had nothing that could compare to what Europe was doing comparably at the same time. But they are fascinating. They are fascinating because they are so entirely different than us.
I think some of the Aztec cities were.
They did.
As comparable to Spanish, and that's my book. I haven't got my book recommendation. Book recommendation is The Hummingbird and the Hawk. It talks about the personal conflict between Cortez and Montezuma in there.
Jack, I got to say very quickly, I want you to continue. When I was in eighth grade, we had an eighth grade history project. It was a video book report where you did a video. You got off in groups, and it was a group of three or four classmates, and you did a video historical book report. And I was the director and sort of the leader of my group. I've been the leader of everything I've ever done, you know, my whole life, even in eighth grade history class. And so I said, you know, we're going to do this story. We're going to do a movie on the fall of the Aztec Empire. And that's what I was doing in eighth grade. And so I actually cast myself as Montezuma. I wasn't Cortez. I was Montezuma. But anyway, my friend was Cortez. And anyway, we did this movie. I think if I could still go back to any point of historical antiquity, if not, you know, the crucifixion of Christ or the resurrection of Christ or something to do with Christ, it would be when you had that point of first contact between the Spanish and the Aztecs on that causeway in Tenochtitlan, modern-day Mexico City. I think that must have been so incredible because what a change occurred. Yeah. But anyway, the reason I bring that up, and I want to give you the final word on this, but the reason I bring that up, I watched this documentary on the Incas, which were a little bit south. They were down in Peru, a little bit south, obviously, of Mexico City, and where the Mayans were even, but down in South America, the Incas. And I watched this documentary, and it said, matter of fact, in the year 1430, they call it Common Era now, it's AD, but 1430 Common Era, the Inca Empire spread from the city of Cusco, which is still, you know, a capital down there in Peru. It spread from Cusco in 1430, and the Incas captured and subjugated the rival areas, and they brought them into their language and religion and cultural practices. And they just said it matter-of-factly, like, of course that's what they would do. I mean, there's nothing wrong with that. That's what they did. That's what happened. And then I'm thinking, well, by God, that's what our people did, too. That's what our people did to the conquerors of their areas. We did it to the conquering, reigning champions of that part of the world. But we're called all sorts of bad things for it. But these people will say, well, that's what they did, and it's fine and dandy. Of course, it's what else would you expect them to do? They spread out and they conquered and they enslaved and they forced upon these conquered people their religion and their habits and their language and so on and so forth. No big deal. But when we do it, it's a bad thing.
Which was the tribe? Was it Incas or Mayans that was in Mel Gibson's Apocalypto? Was it Mayans?
That was the Mayans.
Okay. Well, there are some things you can there. But I do think that capturing people and then cutting off their hearts to sacrifice to their gods is a little bit rough. And our people have never done that. We've never done human.
I think they all did that. I think the Incas, the Mayans, and the Aztecs, they all had that in common. But yes, indeed.
Yeah. If they wanted to sacrifice some feminist to a volcano god, I could give them a pass on that.
Well, you know, our people didn't do that at all. You know, our people, you know, we conquered them just as they conquered one another, but we actually gave them casinos. We were talking about fundraising recently. When did we get our own casinos, Jack? I mean, they gave them casinos. They gave them reservations where they could practice. They named cities and states and bridges and rivers after them. No, nobody did that except for conquering white Christians.
Yeah, and then we also, we name our teams in an honorable way. To say it's the Atlanta Braves, and they say, well, that's really insulting. To say that some Indian tribe is brave, are we supposed to say that they're cowards or something like that? Like, what is with that? This is an honorable thing to say that your adversary is brave or that they're fighting. And, like, we can't get a break. So if there's no reason to try to appeal and make excuses. We need to just be strong. We need to be who we are. We'd be proud of our history. Sure, we've made some mistakes in the past and stuff, but the main thing is we need to stop squabbling amongst our own people and saying, oh, some southern person doesn't like a Midwestern Anglo person or something over some trivial church affiliation or some dynasty. We got to stop squabbling amongst our own people. We need to be proud, and we need to stop the desecration of our statues and our graves. You know, it started with Confederate heroes and graves. It's gone on to everyone else, to Christopher Columbus or to Abraham Lincoln. So we have to just stop the desecration of our churches and our graves. And anyone who doesn't do that is a coward. So that's not us.
Well, there you go, Jack. And again, the hypocrisy is staggering with regard to just a very recent documentary. Well, the Incas moved out and they conquered this area and this tribe and this tribe, and they forced their religion and language and practices and customs and culture on them. Well, again, imagine the reception our pioneers and settlers had when doing the same thing and fighting them for the land. I mean, that was something that happened all over the place and for time and memoriam. Right. You know, of course, up here in North America, the Cherokees just slaughtered and enslaved and raped and killed the tribes they conquered. They didn't set up reservations. They certainly, and they sure as hell didn't set up casinos for them and name towns after them. Only white Christians did this. Our people are the best. Our people are the most morally superior. And it's time people remember that. And it's time people not be afraid to trumpet that. And that's what we're doing. And Jack, I love you.
I
know
Cherokee.
It's cold up there. It's cold down here.
Yeah.
Well, you know, listen, I mean, no, it's all good.
Tennessee,
I mean,
yeah, was part Cherokee.
They're fine.
A little Cherokee in the southern gene pool added a little bit of spice, which I I kind of like, and I think the Cherokees went for the Confederates in
they
the
did.
Well,
you know, we had David Yeagley on. We had David Yeagley, who was an American Indian, and he talked about that. And we've talked about Stan Waddy. Stan Waddy was a famous American Indian Confederate general. I think he was the last general to leave the field for the Confederate Army. It was an American Indian, and so that's all well and good. I think there is a little bit of hyperbole, and you know, every Southerner has a Indian princess in their gene pool. We've all heard those stories. You do the DNA test, it doesn't flesh out. We're 100% white.
Right.
I mean, maybe there was some that mixed a little bit, but it wasn't as prevalent as people think. Yeah, Pocahontas maybe mixed, but most people didn't. Most people didn't. It's sort of like an urban legend. But hey, Jack, we got a big show next week with you. We're already gearing up for it. And it was what we were talking about before the show. We're going to be doing a little, what is it, a PBS. We're going to be doing a little telethon on PPC next week.
We got to do some serious fundraising. And our enemies can do that. And we can't be ashamed about it. We got to ask people who give money to Trump and the like to give us the money to keep going, because this media mafia that's taking over social media, everything, they don't.
Getting the kids to school, cleaning the house, doing the laundry. It seems that the work routine as a stay-at-home mom is never ending. And even though I'm the prime grocery shopper in our family of four, I simply don't have time to scrutinize all the labels on the countless food products I buy. Oh, sure, I've noticed all the latest certification seals. Organic, non-GMO, gluten-free. It definitely seems to be the latest craze. But it was only recently that kosher certification seals caught my attention. You see, my husband had me download an app called Kosher-tify, and it shed light on a century-old certification industry that slipped under the radar screen from the majority of our public. I also noticed a question mark at the end of the app name, and that makes great sense, as there's far more questions regarding this industry than answers. In fact, the developers refer to this as the kosher question. Sure, I'm a busy mom and didn't pay attention to our food culture, but now I have transparency, a convenient grocery list feature, and the ability to eat in favor of my family's best interests, and you can discover it too at thekosherquestion.com.
Can a nation conceived in liberty carry its head high if it denies protection to the youngest and most vulnerable of its citizens? Can a country founded on God-given rights continue to thrive without understanding that life is a precious gift from our Creator? As a physician, I have looked into the eyes of one-pound babies. I have cradled their small bodies in the palm of one hand. I defy those who are careless, who would disregard life and look at these tiny little miracles and say, we're not going to protect that.
But I believe there will come a time when we are all judged on whether or not we took a stand in defense of all life from the moment of conception until our last natural breath. One thing I promise you, I will always take a stand for life.
As a parent, is receiving a faith-based, character-focused education for your children difficult to find? Do you believe that godly principles should be a central component in your child's education? Imagine a school where faith and integrity are at its center, where heritage and responsibility instill character. For over 40 years, American Heritage School has been educating both hearts and minds, bringing out academic excellence. This is the school where character and embracing the providence of a living God are fundamental, where students' national test scores average near the 90th percentile. With American Heritage School's Advanced Distance Education Program, distance is no longer an issue. With an accredited LDS-oriented curriculum from kindergarten through 12th grade, your children can attend from anywhere in the world. American Heritage School will prepare your child for more than a job. It will prepare them for life. To learn more, visit American-Heritage.org. That's American-Heritage.org.
Welcome back. To get on the show, call us on James's Dime at 1-866-986-6397.
thing I don't get about Scoop's music. I mean, that was Jeff Beck in 1967. That's only a few years removed from the glorious doo-wop era, and it's just, I never know when they're going to start singing. I mean, it's just, it's riffs, and it's you know, some weird, you know, in the doo-wop song, you have a couple of minutes, a couple of seconds intro, you sing for a minute, and then you hit the chorus. It's standard. You know it. Even the Beach Boys did it. Scoop, what's going on with 1967 Jeff Beck?
Well, good evening, James and the Cesspool family. Anyways, that song is Beck's Bolero, written by Jeff Beck and one Jimmy Page. Jeff Beck was on the sixth string, and Jimmy Page also plays that song on a 12th string Fender Stratocaster. Also on that song is John Paul Jones, Nicky Hopkins on the piano, and Keith Moon on the drums. Anyways, Beck's Bolero was based on another song with the name Bolero in it, which is instrumental from classical music hundreds of years ago. But that was part of the bumper music on the old Red 42 show, and it was just an absolute masterpiece. And the song is an instrumental, as Mr. Beck does not sing.
Well, I picked up on that after sort of navigating through it. I didn't know it was 67, though. I pictured like mid-70s, but no, 67. I mean, Frankie was still big back then. So anyway, hey, listen,
right. You
do you, I do me. We, you know, but I'll tell you, we meet in the middle here on talk radio here on the Liberty News Radio Network. And, of course, Scoop, for so many years and still to this day, our D.C. correspondent, but he also does his own show now, 7-5 Radio with Walter Yerkew, and you can listen to it. It's what we call the fourth hour here on TPC, immediately following our show right here, same stream, same network. You can catch Scoop and Walter, and they're always up to some good business there on the fourth hour. So stay tuned for 7-5 Radio after TPC, immediately following TPC every week. More Scoop. We're live tonight. He'll be live in just a couple of minutes. But Scoop, you did a little well, there's a couple of things I want to talk to you about tonight. We'll try to work them both in this one segment. Number one, you're, of course, up in the D.C. area. This military occupation of D.C., which took place a few days before the inauguration of Biden, has still not subsided. It's still there. They don't believe in walls, but they've still got the wall up, protecting them from the phantom army of insurrectionists that they believe is going to come back at any moment. It never existed to begin with. It certainly isn't going to resurface, but there it is still. This military occupation of Washington. You're up there. What are you seeing? What do you make of it?
James, I just drove by the Capitol Hill, and it is the most, I can't even word, disheartening, depressing, sad thing I've ever seen. Here is the People's House, the Capitol building, one of the most famous buildings in all of Washington, D.C., if not America. And it is surrounded by this big, ugly, uninviting fence with razor wire. And not only does it go around the Capitol building, it goes around the whole complex. Now, across the street from the Capitol building, you have various federal office buildings. That is also encapsulated in fencing. And you do have National Guard troops standing with the Capitol Police standing guard. And it's just more or less the same. Get out. Stay out. This is not, you have no business here. And this is, and we built that building, we paid for that building, and we paid for the people to work in that building. So it's really disheartening. Also, did a little reconnaissance and research. We still have National Guard troops in Washington, D.C., staying in a very nice hotel near the White House that we get to pay for. I'm all set for our boys to have the finest, but, I mean, this is ridiculous. And they're still in town. The White House and the complex around there is still fenced in, keeping people out. I do not know if they have still have visitors going through the White House. I seriously doubt it. But it's just very disheartening. It looked like something from the movie. What was that movie with Patrick Swayze with the Wolverines? Red Dawn. Looks like something from Red Dawn.
Well, there you have it, ladies and gentlemen. That's what's going on in Washington. And still to this day, I mean, there was never a threat of any sort of resurgence after January the 6th. Whatever happened on January the 6th, whatever you want to call it, however you want to define it, it wasn't coming back again after that day. Everybody knows it. They know it. They're playing a game. It's all games. Right. It's just a big fake. But it's still there now, a month into it.
James, one more thing. There is nobody in Washington, D.C. The streets are empty. It's 26 degrees in downtown Washington, and it's the weekend, and people can't, they still have restrictions on bars and restaurants and nightclubs, so, and there's nobody here. Even the swamp dwellers are working from home. So there's nobody here, so they're guarding against the fanny boogeyman on our dime.
Yeah, well, there you go, and they're going to keep it up, and it looks like there's no sign of it subsiding, and it's still there, and it's will be there for the indefinite future, I guess, if current trends persist. And the question is why? I mean, they've told us how racist, how irresponsible, how non-effective walls are, but they sure as hell put a wall up for a phantom army. I mean, the walls we're building are actually keeping out a legitimate threat. The walls they're building are keeping out the figments of their imagination, but one can stand and one can't be completed at all. And so that's what we've got going on. It's a total clown show, but that's Washington. No new news there. But the fact that all of these barricades and this military fencing with razor wire still up, goes to show, I think, Scoop, the unseriousness of our government, and such an unserious government will not last forever, and we know that too. But you also had up an article at your website there for 75 Radio, mentioning the passing of Rush Limbaugh, which we have now covered on two different occasions tonight. We did a segment in the first hour. We mentioned it in passing earlier here in this, our third hour. I mean, listen, it's a nuanced thing. We're trying to be nuanced. He wasn't all good. He wasn't all bad. He could have done more. He should have done more. I mean, after $500 million, you'd think you'd have maybe enough security to give you one full show of truthfulness like we give you every night here on TPC. But as Sam mentioned, he did mention the drive-by media. He fought some of the same enemies. He just didn't take it as far as he wanted to. You put up a blog post there at 75 Radio's website. Scoop, what can you tell us?
Right. Well, anyways, I put a little picture up of Mr. Limbaugh saying he has passed. He was a pioneer in talk radio. We'll talk about that a little bit later. But his last dying breath on the air, he had mentioned the same breath, Bull Connor, and one James Edwards. And I was like, hold the phone. I was like, I don't think James is registered to any political party, number one. Number two, James does not want to spray fire hoses on anybody. And number three, he's just totally uncalled for. So Rush Limbaugh was just speaking from his backside. He could have mentioned, hey, check out James Edwards, but no, he didn't want to do that. There's absolutely no reason why Rush had to mention you with Bull Connor, unless one of his staffers said, hey, try this out for size, see what happens. But anyways, with that being said, I said, you know what, screw him. So instead of putting this long, drawn-out tribute to Rush Limbaugh, his accomplishments, this and everything, and how he influenced me, guess what? I said, no, sir. I'm going to put up a clip of James Edwards on CNN with Reverend Jesse Peterson, that idiot rolling moron, I call him, and that half-breed, whatever her name was, on CNN. And on the caption put, watch real close or you're going to miss James Edwards.
I saw that. Well, thank you, Scoop, for that. But yeah, indeed, yes, I will never know now. I mean, that's for sure why that happened last month. It was literally one of the last things he ever did on radio was that Bull Connor, James Edwards, whatever kind of point he was trying to make, it didn't really make sense, except for the fact there's no other James Edwards alive or dead that would be mentioned in the same breath as Bull Connor, except for yours truly. So we can only hypothesize maybe the medicine was kicking in there for him. But that was one of the last things he did, and that was that. Now he's no more, and we'll see where his show goes, because there's 600 stations waiting for a vacuum to be filled. But in the meantime, he had $500 million dollars in the bank. We got $500 in the bank, but we're telling more truth and we're doing more good. Thank you. Yes, indeed. Well, yeah, we're at the end of the Christmas fundraising drive. We got to crank it back up next week with the first quarter fundraising drive of 2021. So, yeah, we got to, yeah, maybe we can build upon the 500. But anyway, hey, Scoop, I'd rather be in the trenches with you any day than any of these establishment guys, even the so-called right-wing establishment guys. I'll take my crew here at TPC, Scoop Stanton, Jack Ryan, Keith Alexander, Sam Bushman, Ed Al. I'm James Edwards. Hey, stay tuned for 75 Radio. It's coming up next. It's the fourth hour. Stay tuned. Scoop's just getting started. Wait till he takes over his reins of his own show, and it's coming up in about, 10 minutes' time. I'll be listening. I want you to, too. We'll talk to you next week, everybody. Good night. Godspeed.